Kelly, if you can go ahead and introduce yourself, and then we'll have Pat do the same.
Kelly Clark, I'm the executive director of the Kalamazoo County Land Bank and board member of Vibrant Kalamazoo.
And Pat?
I'm Pat Taylor. I'm the executive director at the Eastside Neighborhood Association here in Kalamazoo.
And we're getting together here today to talk about Eastside Voices. Who wants to jump in and tell me what is Eastside Voices?
Well, Kelly has a bit more practice than I, so I'm going to let her start off.
Sure. Eastside Voices is an intergenerational oral history project, and it is a project that allowed the neighborhood stories of the Eastside to be told, and those stories are being shared via a book, a permanent installation at the Eastside Gateway Project on East Michigan and Phelps, and also a mural which is being displayed at 1616 East Main.
How did this project come together? What was the seed of the idea here? What is it that you wanted to accomplish?
Oh, man, so many things. It all started when the Land Bank convened a group of us to do a peer learning session in Georgia.
In Georgia?
Yes. Oh. A person from the Arts Council.
Center for Community
Center
Progress.
For Community Progress had a program where communities could go to different communities and learn about community development efforts going on in other communities. And the Land Bank went along and graciously asked myself, a person from KIA, all names are escaping me now.
Belinda Tate, the president of the Kalamazoo Institute of Arts, yes. Kristen Chesick, the executive director of the Greater Kalamazoo Arts Council, Adrian Vasquez, who's the executive director of the Hispanic American Council, Pat, and the executive director of the Kalamazoo Eastside Neighborhood Association.
So there's a whole community just there of organizations.
Yeah, we were
that
able
came
to bring eight people to Macon, Georgia. The Center for Community Progress wanted to recognize the great work that's happening in Kalamazoo, utilizing the arts to activate vacant spaces. So we were able to bring together a delegation of eight people from Kalamazoo to meet eight people in Macon, Georgia, and share with each other how we were utilizing the arts in this way. Turn it back over to Pat to talk about how this idea hatched in that trip.
Okay.
It's funny how things turn around, because the person that seeded the idea for us and the project actually is Belinda Tate. Mm-hmm. She had done a presentation in Georgia on another project that she had done with another organization when she was on the east side of the country, mm-hmm. where she had gotten residents together and they were going to reminisce about the historical components of where they were living since it was being revitalized and renewed. They wanted to maintain that history. And so they got a bunch of people together. She showed this information to us, and we came up with the idea of, wouldn't that be cool to have a historical narrative of what it's like living on the east side from an intergenerational perspective.
So what did you find out from digging into this project? Describe the east side community, demographics, who lives there?
Regular, everyday, average people that are in love with their neighborhood and are very good neighbors to each other and very community-minded.
So it was a strong community to begin with?
Yes.
Okay.
It is a strong community.
And I used to live there.
So many
when
people
I was a
used
little
to live
kid.
There.
Yeah, so it holds a fond place in my heart.
Yes.
Yeah.
And actually, since you mentioned that, there's a lot of people who used to live on the east side that grew up and moved out. Mm-hmm. One of the initial people that we made contact with, the architect, she used to live over on Phelps Street. Mm-hmm. But she now lives in California and has a firm over there with her husband. Mm-hmm. I kept meeting people that used to live there and had such a fondness for it. But the neighborhood was in such deterioration from the paper mills moving away and from the businesses going away that the general community wouldn't think of the east side as being a family-friendly type of place. So there was room for us to get that information out to people.
So the perception out there was not what you wanted it to be for the east side?
Not really.
Yeah.
Everybody kept saying, the poor East Side, too bad something couldn't be done with it. But there was such a pride when you talked with the residents that still live there. Yeah. Some of them inherited the homes that they live in. Some of them moved in just because they were impressed with the neighbors and the families. So it was totally different feeling from the residents as opposed to the general public, I think. And we wanted to make sure that the general public knew that the East Side is a fantastic place. It's a good place to raise your family. Mm-hmm. It's close to downtown, and it's very picturesque.
Yeah.
Very artistic, because we have several artists that also live in the community, and we wanted to showcase that also.
Kelly, in terms of the land bank, what was your interest in getting involved in this project?
Yeah, well, as Pat mentioned, we were together in Macon, Georgia, and heard Belinda Tate's presentation about the work when she was with the Diggs Gallery at Winston-Salem University. And that sparked an idea from Pat to think about an intergenerational oral history project on the East Side. And for me, Pat and I have been partnering together on many parcels of land that the land bank has and getting the community together to envision what those parcels could look like if they're repurposed. So my immediate thought was, I wonder if there's a way in which we can incorporate the history of the neighborhood into this redevelopment. We've got all of the folks from the neighborhood coming together to develop the visions for the redevelopment that's happening. But my thought was, wouldn't it be wonderful if not only having the residents develop the vision for what's happening, we could actually have the neighborhood story told in the developments so that that story is uplifted. And when people are experiencing the new development, maybe they're from a different community, that they're seeing those stories and that they're seeing that there is this rich history in the neighborhood that really deserves to be elevated. And so from my point of view, I just thought this would be such a great way to elevate those projects and continue to integrate the voices of the neighborhood in those projects.
So let's talk a little bit more about that oral history, which kind of translates into the book. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
And I believe you had Buddy Hanna and Sid Ellis. Were they the ones collecting these?
Yeah. So Pat immediately identified Buddy and Sid and has had longstanding relationships with those local treasures. So I'll turn it over to Pat to talk more about that.
So how did that happen, Pat? I understand they had 17 interviews, was it?
Yes.
That they gathered. And what did they hear? Who did they meet?
Oh, they met people that still lived in the neighborhood. They met seniors that live in the neighborhood. They also were able to identify people who no longer lived in the neighborhood that wanted to tell their story about what it's like to live on the East Side. Buddy actually does live over on the East Side, and we had known each other for probably ever. And I'd known Sid for almost as long.
Almost forever.
Right. We'd done several projects together before I'd come to the East Side Neighborhood Association. And so they were the first people to come to mind because they have this community mindset of working in the community and sharing good things, that positive activities.
And how did they find the people with the stories? Is it like a knock on the door, go down the street, or how did they find them?
It was a little bit of everything. We publicized it in our newsletter,
okay.
And we told our board, who are East Side residents, to go and come up with some names that they think would like to be identified. And then we did a list at our regular meetings, anybody that's interested in participating. There's also a group called they used to be called the Roosevelt Schools Reunion, and they would come to us every year announcing when their reunion would be. Mm-hmm. And so the lead person for that, I talked with her, and she identified some folks, and we hooked up with them through that means also. Okay. It was kind of a fun project.
And where can one hear some of these oral histories? Are they preserved in some place that you can tap into?
So that's a great question. You know, the thing that we haven't had a chance to talk about today is Public Media Network also was a partner on this project. And Sonia Hollins led that effort over there. As a result of that, there is a 30-minute video that Public Media Network, together with some young people who were able to participate and get some training on different types of media put together, and that will be available on Public Media Network's website. And it's just a really wonderful 30-minute documentary, really, listening to all of these stories. A lot of interesting themes were explored, from what was it like to growing up. What was it like growing up as a kid here? What were race relations like over the history of the East Side? How are people feeling about the new development? And in addition to the video, the book will be available online. We'll have a link both on the Neighborhood Association website and the Land Bank's website. So within a few weeks or in January, both of those resources will be available.
Any of those stories that either of you listened to and stuck with you that you can share?
Yeah, from the Land Bank perspective, one of the stories that really stuck with me was the story of Jimmy Jackson, who's the vice chair of the Eastside Neighborhood Association. And he's been very involved in the neighborhood, but also some of the redevelopment work that's been happening. And he shared that his family had actually grown up in one of the houses that was demolished over the years at what is now the Eastside Gateway Project, which is 7 net zero ready energy efficient homes in a pocket park, which has, you know, these voices showcased in a permanent art installation. And it was really interesting to hear that story because it really demonstrated the complexity of this work. That, you know, there is a lot of sorrow and grief with losing structures in our community, and it is complex work, and we can have a lot of different emotions about this.
Yeah.
And it's okay for us to be open about this and have honest conversations about this work. So that was something that really stuck with me.
Talk a little bit more about the Eastside Gateway Project. What is that? Where is it located?
That is located on East Michigan, in between Forsman and Phelps. It is seven net zero ready, highly energy efficient homes and a pocket park. There is a permanent art installation, which was done by Conrad Kaufman, which showcases stories from Eastside Voices. And it is the site of what was 11 formerly abandoned or vacant properties that had come into the Land Bank's inventory over the last decade. So the Neighborhood Association, together with the Land Bank, led a series of meetings with residents and stakeholders in 2017 to develop that vision. And we're working through completing that vision right now.
And is there a projected end date or?
The five of the seven homes have been constructed. Four of them are sold and occupied. The pocket park is complete, and we're really happy that Habitat for Humanity is going to be doing the two last homes at the site. They're going to be able to make sure that we have opportunities for everyone at all incomes. Those two last homes will be being completed over the next 2 years.
The community pocket park, I like that, pocket park. Does that mean that it's kind of contained between buildings or
It's on the corner of Phelps and East Michigan, and it's a small space. So, you know, you sometimes hear this notion of pocket park or pocket plaza.
Is that what the pocket means, that it's a small space?
Intimate. And, you know, then the idea of taking small spaces in your community and making them wonderful places.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't always have to be a big, large space. Sometimes even if we have access to just something small, we can do something pretty special.
And I understand that that will include art and some kind of welcoming entry, a labyrinth?
Yeah, and so that's all complete. So we would encourage people to go by and park your car and get out and take a walk. Those ideas came out of some of these sessions. We had a design workshop specifically on the pocket park, and residents participated in that workshop. So the idea that came out of that was a labyrinth, green space, and native plantings. And then, as Pat shared, when we went to Macon, Georgia, this notion of the Oral History Project started to hatch and take root. And then that evolved into the idea that the pocket park could also have art pieces, which would be permanent and could share these stories in that way.
And I understand there was a temporary installation and a permanent installation. The temporary one, artist Gerald King?
That's right. Gerald King completed the mural. So the mural has all of the stories in a visual form. That's on the cover of the book also is being displayed at a property that is slated for demolition.
That's why it's temporary. Okay.
Right. But it was designed so that it can be reused. So it was printed on a very large banner and installed. And the idea was we had assessed the property. We were hoping to save it, but the construction experts let us know it would cost more to fix it up than to build new. So we made a plan to have the mural done on material that could be removed such that it could be saved. So it's up on the building right now, and you know, giving the building a little bit of love as we wait to find some funds to be able to demolish it. And when that happens, then the mural will be able to be removed and find another home.
Oh, okay. So not completely temporary. That's always good. You don't want somebody's work to disappear.
Right, right.
And we mentioned earlier Conrad Kaufman's mural, which is permanent. Would either of you want to describe what is in that mural?
Wow.
And where is it located?
It's located on the corner of East Michigan and Phelps Street.
Same place. Okay.
Yeah. It's hard to. You have to see it to believe it. He did a wonderful job of making an archway to go into the labyrinth over the archway. It starts off with the pillars and the archway. And over the archway, it says, "Welcome to the East Side." And then it has the, I don't know what you'd call it, little books around the pillars. And each of them has like a quote of one of the residents talking that's in the book.
Oh.
And pictures associated with it. He did a wonderful job.
He always does.
Yes, he does.
It's really more of a set of steel artistic sculptures rather than a mural.
Oh, yes.
So
I see.
A history pole in the middle of the labyrinth.
That's what I was
see.
Of, yes.
Okay.
With
okay.
pages of the books made
yes.
out of concrete on the pole.
Ah.
With the quotes mm-hmm. and then an interpretive sign, which is again shaped like a book, an open book, as well as the steel sculpture, which is 10 feet high, which connects the Welcome to the East Side entry sign with the history pole. So Pat's right. You have to see it to really take it in.
Well, I'm adding it to my bucket list in the next few days, if not today. So is there anything else that you want us to know about the East Side? And how do you measure success, perhaps, on this project? When you had that like opening of this, the grand opening, so to speak, who responded? How did that go?
That went well. We have several people who are still kind of taking in the information. We had boards made, or I should say Kelly and her office had boards made to describe the project and smaller versions of the mural. People were really excited to see that and read about the history and look at the book and tell the residents, to the other residents and neighbors about what was going on. When the mural was put up, along with some other signage, people would come into the office and talk about how neat it was to see that scenario.
I've got to think that adds to neighborhood pride, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yeah. And that's exactly where I was going with that. People are quite happy that they have something to show that they don't, that's people can just go down the street and notice
yeah.
that it's happening. They're very excited about that.
You know, another thing that really struck me at the event, we had a very big turnout. And when Sonia put the video on, we turned the lights off, and it was quiet as a pin for 30 minutes as everyone watched this video.
Yeah.
And then so much conversation after the video of people talking with the folks who'd been interviewed and wanting to know more about their stories, just a lot of interest in elevated interest in the history of the neighborhood and an opportunity for people to share with one another and learn from people who are older than them about what it was like to grow up on the East Side and things that have happened over the last 50 to 70 to 80 years.
Sounds like success to me. Well, thank you both for coming in and talking about the East Side neighborhood.
And thank you for having us.
Thank you.